Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Producer Robbie's just sucking up to me this morning, man. Holy cow. Twin Cities News Talk is what you're listening to, and you can leave a talk back via the iHeartRadio app if you're listening to Twin Cities News Talk on the stream. Going to get into a couple of stories here. Carver County residents taking issue with vulgar, sexually graphic books in school libraries. Why in the world are kindergartens being taught radical gender theory? This is all ahead of a little bit later on this editorial that I'll share with you in the hour in the Star Tribune as it relates to the abortion bills moving through the legislature right now. Have a few talkbacks to share, though. Robbie's rundown included story about Ukraine. We're sending tanks over there. What in the world's going on? Why are we escalating the tension between Russia and Ukraine? Also mentioned the pothole issue here in Minnesota is rampant. Let's hear from you.
Are you saying the potholes in Minneapolis are so bad the mayor could become the next transportation secretary?
Hey, guys. Isn't there a rumor that Putin is trying to work with the Taliban to buy the equipment that we left in Afghanistan? If that's the case, this is going to be a real big problem.
Raquel, South Minneapolis. We're about $34 trillion in debt, and we're sending tanks to Ukraine.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. And I don't understand why they didn't buy tanks with the billions of dollars that we have already sent them.
The reason we're in Ukraine right now is because of Biden's incompetent withdrawal from Ukraine. The debate at the beginning was sending a couple of planes when all the tanks were parked north of Kiev in the country. Now we're spending billions of dollars. The Pentagon is great at spending money. They're just not very good at winning wars. There's no strategy. I don't hear anything about how this is going to be won or how a peace might be negotiated.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, to the Putin buying equipment from Afghanistan, I haven't read anything with regard to that. This move by Biden with the tanks could have a couple of different rationales. It feels like there could be backdoor dealings being done here that we're unaware of, a distraction, as I mentioned earlier. I was reading some fantastic pieces dating back decades, and somebody had shared this on Twitter, and my apologies to you if you're listening. I don't remember which of our fantastic friends of the show had tweeted this at us, but those that are familiar and experts in the region and the relations with Russia and the neighbors surrounding Russia, they had predicted this for a long, long time, especially when it comes to Ukraine's possible inclusion into NATO and how that would, and I'm really simplifying this, be the straw that broke the camel's back and that Russia wouldn't stand for it. We've covered this in detail before on the show many, many months ago. But the takeaway and what I'm trying to drive at here is that, you know, I don't know what we're doing to what the talkbacker was saying because of everything I just mentioned. What's the end game in all of this? And it seemed as if Ukraine has been holding their own for quite a long time. So thank you for the talkbacks. We'll continue to take them throughout the show this morning. A few tweets I want to share. This is S. Tallarico wrote, as it relates to the story that I started the show off with of North Dakota potentially suing us if we pass the blackout bill, the carbon 2040 bill. I don't think the Dems are worried about being sued by North Dakota. They have $17.6 billion sitting in the bank. I responded, though, they won't after the wall's budget proposal. Cookie Pat, friend of the show, said New Coke sucked, tasted like Pepsi. Yeah, I was not a fan of New Coke. I liked Clear Pepsi, but I was not a fan of New Coke. Don't know the last time I told the story. It's been a long time. I know you've never heard it, Robbie, so I'll tell it really quick, and then we'll dive into some more serious matters. But back in 85, when New Coke was introduced, my dad was a massive regular Coke fan. So the, you know, everybody was believing that we would not have regular Coke anymore. We would just have New Coke. So my father smartly went and bought cases of regular Coke. It's like, I'm saving up my regular Coke. So I remember in our garage on top, we're just, I don't know how many cases, I mean, it was stacked. of Coke, regular Coke. So, of course, the whole new Coke experiment failed. They brought back classic Coke, right, shortly afterwards and all this. But we still had for a really long time. So at one point in time, after they brought back classic Coke, we had decided that we were going to go and check out the cases of Coke. Now, they've been in, I don't know how long they've been there, but they've been there for a long time. When we went to go grab the boxes, suddenly they were light. We're like, what? What? The Coke had eaten through the aluminum. And and it slowly over time spilled out behind the refrigerator.
Oh.
So, like, some of the cases were completely, like, I didn't know that that could.
Oh, no.
I'm sure he was a factor. We were living in Southern California at the time, so I'm sure that that was part of the.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, though, going to grab it, like, what in the world? And then opening it up and looking, just at the Coke had eaten right through.
Wow.
All right. Let's go here. Residents in a Twin Cities suburb are voicing concerns about the vulgar language and sexually explicit content in pro-LGBT and anti-racist school library books. School library books. During an open forum portion of the Eastern Carver County School Board meeting in Chaska, community members requested more transparency and input about the books that children and teenagers in the district can get their hands on. One resident, Svetlana Kolznikova, shared words and passages from four books available in the district. Books she claimed are cataloged in the public library under the adult section. And let me make clear, I'm fine with that. If the public library wants to go and contain these books, that's where they should be. If parents want their children to have these sexually explicit, anti-racist, CRT, meaning racist books, fine. In the adult section, where children don't typically go to get these books. But certainly in school libraries, completely and utterly inappropriate. And we'll get into more of that in a moment. Scenes from the selected books use ample profanity and depict alcohol, drug use, sexual activity, and often nudity, with explicit language and images. One of the books Kolznikova drew attention to is titled Monday's Not Coming, Coming by Tiffany Jackson, was featured in Publishers Weekly Anti-Racist Children's and YA Reading List. Another book, Tricks by Ellen Hopkins, a New York Times bestseller. I'll get back to that in a moment because this is relevant. About five troubled teenagers falling into prostitution as they search for freedom, safety, community, family, and love. Again, school library books. Also, Allison Bechdel's Fun Home, a family tragicomic about a lesbian who finds out weeks before her father's death that she was gay. This is just the tip of the sword of what's in our libraries, said Svetlana Kolznikova. What kind of parent in their right mind would want their 14-year-old child to read this book no matter what the child identity is and expect anything good to come of it? Now, again, if parents want to do that, that should be resigned for the home. But that's part of the reason why they're being pushed in our schools. She went on to say, what purpose does this serve in our school's education? And that's the question that's begging for an answer. I think I have one, but it's not a good one. And one that they'll never admit, those that are pushing this garbage. Are they age appropriate? Maybe we should use the FCC guidelines to pick the books for the library and in the classroom. Another Carver resident and her mother of five, Jen Haddon, called out the school board for allegedly trying to shut out residents from discussions related to books chosen by our educators. Haddon also took umbrage with an unnamed graphic novel available in the school district that allegedly depicts a rape scene of a 9-year-old girl by an adult man, along with pages of illustrated naked bodies and sex acts of every kind. The board voted Monday night to approve revisions to its policy for selecting library and media materials. Under the changes, library records will indicate if the parents have asked for their children to not be exposed to certain books or genres. No, it should always be, do you have permission? You have to get permission first before you, if they're going to include them in the schools outright. The policy also outlines the process for filing complaints about specific library books. One board member, Joe Scott, voted against the policy because he was concerned that it didn't do enough to include parents and taxpayers into discussion. So you got a few things at play here, in my opinion. We have this bizarro sexualizing of our youth, which I don't understand, but I'm going to try to here in a moment. But you've also got the money angle on this, too. Because a part of it that doesn't get talked about is the individuals that are writing these books, these authors, they're making bank off this trash. As somebody who's written his own series of science fiction books, which are available on Amazon.com, by the way, under John J.O.N. Justice and Embark. If you like good versus evil stories and no agenda involved, right? They're making money off of this. Selling books is hard. But you know what? The schools go and buy these books up in bulk. So they make bank off of them. Ultimately, the parents have got to continue to take a unified stance and declare that the government shouldn't try and parent their child. Just educate. Because that's what's happening. Now, let me add this to the discussion. We covered this a bit yesterday. I want to play this audio for you. The North Carolina Teacher Association provides resources to local schools and daycares on introducing radical gender theory to young children. Now, I have my own theory as to why this is happening and why it suddenly exploded. The North Carolina Association of Education for Young Children hosts a documentary on their website called Reflecting on Anti-Bias Education in Action, The Early Years, featuring a scene with a group of children aged 4 and 5 getting a lesson on gender identity from their non-binary teacher. The film was recently shown to daycare owners in North Carolina during a training session by this group, according to Jordan Chamberlain of the Washington Free Beacon. The clip from the segment on diversity in the 48-minute film showed a classroom discussion on gender identity. Again, you're talking 4 and 5-year-olds, including non-binary identities. Maddie Piper, a teacher who identifies as non-binary, introduced a doll named Nash to a group of 10 children aged 4 and 5 years old. The camera pivots to a team discussion of 4 educators involved in the documentary who were pleased that the child had brought up the subject of non-binary without being prompted. The film returns to the classroom where Piper then leads the children in a pronoun exercise, attempting to get them to refer to the singular doll in her lap as they. Just like me, Nash is a non-binary, so they're not sure if it's a boy or a girl. So when people ask them, are you a boy or a girl right now, they just feel like saying, I'm a kid, while they're figuring it out. The National Association for Education of Young Children and its state's affiliates like North Carolina are all on board with introducing this radical gender theory to kids. Let me play you the audio here that I just described.
Huckleberries, today I wanted to introduce you to a new friend in our class. Well, this, Huckleberries, is my friend, Nash. It's their first day in our class. They're just looking around at all of you, and they're so curious to know who you all are.
Today was fun. It was really interesting, though, knowing going in, being like, I don't know what questions kiddos are going to have or what they're going to say. Which is both like nerve-wracking, but also kind of exciting. It's that place of not knowing as a teacher and just being okay with that.
Mm-hmm. And the friend likes to ask the question, are you a boy or a girl? And Mash answers, I'm just a kid.
But kids can be boys or girls.
They can be boys or girls. Yeah.
Or maybe non-binary.
Yeah.
It was just like non-binary, yeah. Yeah. That's just something that we know.
No, it's not.
It's something, I mean, it's like they're 4 and 5 years old and they just didn't make a big deal out of being a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was a huge testament to how much we've been talking about it in the classroom that you never mentioned the term non-binary. It was a child who brought that up because it's constantly in conversation.
Yeah, just like me. So Nash, just like me, is non-binary. So they aren't sure if they're a boy or a girl. So when people ask them, are you a boy or a girl? Right now they just feel like saying, I'm a kid. They're figuring it out.
Why does he like stars?
They like stars.
They like stars.
Yeah. And they are really...
They wore a star shirt.
They wore their star shirt because it's their favorite shirt. And because they were nervous today, they thought they would wear something that makes them feel special.
So were the parents aware that this was going on? If they were, shame on them. That's on them. If this is how parents want their children raised, by a radical progressive who's been indoctrinated into this via academia. Because that's one angle of this. The individual, the instructor here, they're a byproduct of public education and the university system. So if parents are allowing this to happen, that's on them. The societal standard used to be, and why I think this is happening, the societal standard used to be that until you're 18 years old, right, you're still at the behest of your parents. Parents decide and make choices for you up until that point of 18. Then you are an adult and you can start your adulting. The aspect of what's happening here and what we're listening to is to devalue the parent. The family unit. Gender identity, healthcare policies, sexuality pushed by the government education system, our school libraries, our government libraries, it all is an attempt to devalue the importance of the parent. While you have extreme infanticide bills in our own legislature seeking to devalue the child, it's all part of a much bigger play here. The less policies are so bad that they have successfully waged this culture war to mask their horrible ideas. Now, I have more to get to on this, including another story here in the stack. Vimeo removes documentary on parents' perspectives of trans-identified children for hateful content. Want to hear from you as well. 651-989-5855. Leave a talk back. We have some more local news to get to. Hennepin County Library says event excluding white-bodied people. Hey, that's us. Was incorrect. All the details coming up on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Lisa Maplewood, responding to the discussions around what happened in that daycare and that whole gender non-binary discussion, I think it goes beyond just taking the parents out of the equation. I think their ultimate goal is to mess up these children as much as they can so that as they grow up, they can't think on their own. They can't exist on their own. They need the government to guide them.
Oh my God, you guys, what you just played made me absolutely sick to my stomach. I almost swore. I had to sit down. Wow, that is brainwashing. That is insane. And the only reason the kid knows to say non-binary is probably because you gave him a cookie one day when he remembered that stupid phrase. Oh man, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah, we're definitely in trouble. Thank you for the talkbacks via the iHeartRadio app. It's Twin Cities News Talk. John Justice, producer Robbie. North Carolina Teacher Association instructs kindergartens and kindergartners in radical gender theory. They didn't learn this on their own. Oh, and they all sit back so proud of themselves as they march our children into oblivion. The societal standard has always been that a child at 18 becomes an adult. And then can begin to start adulting. Until that time, the parent or guardian, the adults, actually get to decide how they want to raise the child. What we're seeing now is an effort to It is undermining that whole idea. It is stripping away the value of the parent and the family unit. Gender identity, healthcare policy, sexuality, all of this pushed in our government institutions seeks to devalue the importance of the parents. It's the whole reason why these school districts are pushing so hard and putting in policies so that children don't have to go and let their parents know. Minors don't have to go and let their parents know of their own personal choices as it relates to their body. They get more control that way. And it goes beyond that. We'll get into more of this later on in this hour. This extreme PRO Act and the other abortion bills sanctioning infanticide, this legislation, what does it seek to do? Well, that seeks to devalue the child. So let's go down the road. If you can abort a child up until birth, then there's less importance on the baby that is born. Pretty simple. And thus, you're probably more open to allowing the elites in society to go and raise your child. And then you have the political angle of this whole thing. Because who is going to push back before anybody else is? Predominantly conservatives. So it's brazenly partisan in their attempts to destroy conservatives on one side and parents on all sides. Your critical race theory, your ESG, your DEI, it's all the same. It's open warfare on common sense conservatives and traditional values. Hennepin County Library says in an event advertising a Nordic spoon carving class for people of color was incorrect. Wait, what? The wood carving event description from Fireweed Community Woodshop was incorrect. We have contacted our programming partners, and they have updated the listing to remove the exclusionary language. This is according to Daniel Rogan, the assistant to the county administrator to Alpha News. The event's description previously stated that this class is intended for folks identifying as people of color. The website went on to tell people not registered for the event if they are to not register for the event if they are a white-bodied person. So no wood shop for you. The exclusionary language has been removed, but the event is still called a BIPOC spoon carving. And again, white liberals will applaud. Yay! We're horrible and awful, while conservatives will condemn. That's what this is all about. We actually have exclusive audio from this particular event.
Do not try and bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth.
What truth?
You're a liberal.
There is no spoon.
Another event listed in the Fireweed Community Woodshop website said it's being sponsored by the Hennepin County Library excludes participants on the basis of sex. So no having sex there. That's not what they mean. I'm sorry.
You were serious about that?
All community members who identify as women or non-binary are welcome. Okay, so if you want to go to this particular woodshop class and you happen to be a man, then just identify as a woman. You'll still be able to go to woodshop. This class is sponsored by the Hennepin County Library and is available as a free class for BIPOC students! Exclamation point. Organizers of this event, Firewood Community Workshop, say their mission is to empower women and non-binary folks through the art of woodcraft. Another wood carving course offered by Fireweed is a Power Tools 101 course. The jokes just write themselves, don't they, Robbie? Which says that it's for women and marginalized genders who feel comfortable with a feminine approach to woodworking.
No.
I'm going to read that again. This is this woodworking course, the Power Tools 101. Says it for women and marginalized genders and those who feel comfortable with a feminine approach to woodworking.
Oh, no.
They offer micro reparations pricing for BIPOC students wishing to pay only the consumables and materials fee of $26. You know what I say? Let them carve wood.
Except if it's morning wood.
Hold on, I got it.
Holy crap, what's going on?
It's your culture war gone mad. And it's all about politics. It's all about politics. The left's policies are so atrociously awful that this is how they win elections. Because it doesn't matter what you, it doesn't matter what garbage you push. First off, they'll lie to you. We'll get into more of this coming up in a moment. That entire midterm election and the campaigns that were run here in Minnesota was pure gaslighting by the left. All the ads of how extreme Dr. Scott Jensen was. We'll get into that. Oh, really? He's extreme. I'll lay out what Dr. Scott Jensen would have done. And Dr. Scott, if you happen to be listening, feel free to call in. I'll lay out all the extreme things by comparison to what the left is doing now, the DFL is doing now in the legislature. It was all pure and utter gaslighting. But they're winning. Why? Because they're successfully waging this culture war. First off, they'll lie when they run for office. They won't tell you exactly what they're going to do like they did with abortion. But they'll also paint the opposition as being so evil, evil, horrible, and wrong that how could you can't ever vote for them? And look for all the things they're against. They complained about M&Ms for crying out loud. We even lost Mark Hamill. I'll share with you this editorial. I'll get to your phone calls and talkbacks on the way. I'm surprised the Star Tribune ran this, but I think even the editorial board of the Star Tribune knows just how extreme the abortion bills are moving through the legislature. They'll talk about it amongst their friends behind closed doors, but they'll never speak it out loud. They'll let other individuals voice their concern. This piece here on abortion, DFLers kept promises they never made. Who are the extremists in Minnesota again? It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. John Justice, producer Robbie. 1 hour from now, we'll check in with Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. He is live at the state capitol, hearing on the blackout bill, Carbon 40 plan. Oh, no, but it was the right that was extreme. It's also lobby day for the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. We're going to get to your talkbacks here in just a moment. And we'll talk more about this next hour at 8 o'clock. You do not want to miss this coming up at 8 o'clock. I can't take credit for this. I got to thank friend of the show, Rosemount Rick. He shared a tweet from COVID Clarity. COVID Clarity went and did the math so I didn't have to. Guess who's not getting the money back? The percentage. It's infuriating. It's absolutely infuriating. Who is getting some of the $17.6 billion surplus back and who isn't? I can't be too hard on the liberal voters, though, because they were lied to. Hopefully they can make amends the next election cycle. We'll get into this in this editorial. But we were all sold and told about how extreme Republicans are. Oh, Dr. Scott Jensen's too extreme for Minnesota. Really? Because he probably just would have left the abortion issue alone. It was already legal here via the Constitution here in the state of Minnesota. Probably wouldn't have advocated for any gun control. He vowed to cut taxes and decrease spending. He supported clean energy and potential nuclear power along with green technology, some of which I didn't even support, but at least he was talking about the new, smaller nuclear power units. More than likely would have given a majority of the money of that surplus back to you. What do we get in exchange? One of the biggest budgets that Walz has ever proposed. Carbon 2040 blackout bill. It's going to cost Minnesotans billions of dollars and get us sued by North Dakota. Oh, that is me getting into the bill that sanctions infanticide here in the state. Driver's license for illegal aliens. Although we were told that we can't, we're not allowed to say that. I was going to save this for later on, but I'll play this now. This happened on the House floor recently during a debate. This is Representative Peggy Scott, big fan of hers, out of Andover.
Last night in Ways and Means, we were talking about House File 4, the driver's licenses for illegals. And Representative Hassan was very adamant about the humanity,
Representative Scott, Representative Scott, I was just going to correct you that we do not refer to people as illegals. No human is illegal.
Well, where's the law saying that?
No, you don't. She can refer to them in the proper definition. I love that we don't. Who's we in this? No, that's you. You don't want to refer to them as illegal, you don't have to. People can be illegal. It's kind of written in law. Get over it. All right, before we dive into what I think, some oddities happening as it relates to the coverage around the abortion bills working through in this amazing editorial, let's hear from you via the iHeartRadio app.
Hi, John. I have a comment on the children in kindergarten getting taught this ridiculousness. My late great grandmother always told me, when you take God out of the schools, you let the devil in. Have a great day.
Yeah, I was just wondering, why is cultural appropriation bad, but gender appropriation good?
How dare you?
How dare you point out the obvious? Dom of Maple Grove, good morning, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, calling about the super smart kid with the non-binary inclusion. You know, sometimes I think too much education could be a problem. And I'm thinking about teacher education to get a degree in critical craft theory. But my main question is this. If these books are such hot sellers, who's buying them besides Harry Potter fans? It can't just be the schools, because our kids went to school in North Carolina in the 90s, and it was a great school system. Boys were boys, girls were girls. I want to be very clear about this, because I have right now very good friends that are gay and lesbian and transgender, and I can't tell the difference unless they tell me what they are. So I'm hoping that this thinking is not permeating a majority of Americans. That's my concern.
I'll tell you who's buying them. I'm telling you who's buying them. It's the same individuals that buy up the latest Michelle Obama book that bombs, or the Hillary Clinton book that bombs. Or they have pre-made stickers discounted 85% because nobody goes and buys them. These end up getting bought in bulk by a bunch of guilty-feeling white liberals who then go and distribute it to schools and get funding from schools as well. It's a racket. So is critical race theory. People are making bank off this garbage. And then it's being perpetuated like an infection into our schools by individuals who are indoctrinated in the school system. And then we end up with exclusionary wood carving courses.
And white-bodied people.
And white-bodied people. Well, you know, it's mummified people we learned yesterday. A mummified person we learned yesterday, too.
And you can't say Fields at Stanford.
Good morning, Ton.
Hey, good morning, John. I have a quick question here, because I almost sent you that article last night in an email about the Nordic spoon carving. And here's my question. I took a course once in Japanese bamboo painting, ink painting with bamboo.
Okay.
And it's very complex to be considered art. You know, the leaves, actually, there's a father leaf and a wife leaf, and
okay,
things have to be in the proper place, and it can be read,
okay,
like a word.
Okay.
And there's Chinese calligraphy.
Well, get to the point here, buddy.
Okay, well, like at the Nelson Museum in Kansas City, the entire wall of African walking sticks, carved walking sticks, high African art. Now, it occurs to me that Nordic is a Scandinavian country, but Nordic wood carving class only for BIPOCs. If you had a African walking stick carving class for anyone but BIPOCs, would that not be cultural appropriation?
Look, it's a moving target on what's allowed and what's not allowed. If you're on the left, you can be as irrational and hypocritical as you want to be, as long as it furthers your agenda. It's a common sense free card. It's that simple. Friend of the show, Tom, St. Paul. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. As always, I love to talk back, but then I get so whipped up listening, I want to call. So thanks for that.
Yeah. What you got?
You know, listening to you talk about this nonsense in the schools, I find it curious but not surprising that Walz's budget is all about making sure that this continues. He not only wants to fund more of this nonsense in the schools, but he wants to make sure that the government's providing daycare, that the government's providing preschool and after-school programs. You know, they're basically turning our children into Brave New World,
yeah,
these sexualized, pleasure-driven beings. And, you know, man, here's my thought on this. Like, I always get whipped up about this stuff, but then people say, well, we have to turn the other cheek. We have to be the nice guys. And I'm at the point where it's going to have to be parents who deal with this. And I think you either need to show up at the school or the school board meetings like Jesus at the temple and overturn tables if you need to. But they're indoctrinating your children. And why more people aren't absolutely furious about this, I don't know. I don't have kids, man. I technically don't have skin in the game. And I'm ready to head to the school board myself and say, this has to stop. What is wrong with you?
But that's where it, and Tom, thank you, as always. But that's, you're right from the standpoint that you don't have kids. And, you know, I've got one kid still in school. Logan is out, thankfully. But these kids are going to grow up. And they're going to end up in corporations. They're going to end up potentially being teachers. They're going to end up running for office. So you do have skin in the game. We all do. That teacher in that kindergarten class that thought it was perfectly fine and acceptable to brainwash a bunch of 4 and 5 year olds, basically teaching them about sexuality and sex at 4 and 5 years old. And they're sitting back gleefully. Isn't it great? You know, I don't know where it ends, but you're right. People have got to step up and let their voices be heard. Because the machine's in play in this whole thing. These articles that I have here. So the Star Tribune put out this piece. The women legislators lead push to shape future abortion access in Minnesota. DFL lawmakers are moving a sweeping agenda after years of inaction on the issue. So it highlights Carly Kodazaw-Whittem. Talking about her, this is the one of the most impactful pieces of legislation that I'll ever pass. Erin May Quaid, you know, Senator Jen McEwen. In the story itself, there is no details as to what lengths they're willing to go. It's all about just their stories. It's truly sickening, in my opinion, that the DFL female leadership is so supportive of infanticide and the agenda. Their urge for control is nothing short of evil and vindictive. That's what it feels like. That's what Governor Walz is, and we'll get into more of this coming up in a moment. That's what his budget proposal feels like. It all feels evil and vindictive. They're so confident, and maybe they're right to be so. They won the last election. The dutiful Democrats and progressives here in the state, they'll continue to vote them into power, that everything they're doing is just to go and stick it to the right, figuring that everybody else is already suffering enough and they've already vilified and demonized conservatives to the point that they feel like they're never going to be able to vote for them again. MenPost put together a fantastic article about the legal restrictions as it relates to late-term abortions I want to share with you here in a moment. But before we take a break, let me go through this. Surprising editorial that was posted in the Star Tribune by John C. Chalberg from Bloomington. He writes this. Remember those abortion issue ads the DFL aired during the last fall's election campaign? The party and its various candidates and support groups didn't just run a few ads on the subject. They flooded our television screens with them. Almost as if nothing else mattered. It was nonstop. We all saw them. The DFL, as you recall, was completely candid. They hid nothing. After all, we saw American democracy in action. We want to preserve and celebrate our democracy, don't we? Remember the ad that told us how the DFL would assure that every individual had a fundamental right to an abortion and explain the sweeping effects that that would have? And in this age of feelings, the DFL couldn't resist tugging at our heartstrings with a few of their ads. Recall the ad with a teenage girl. She was pregnant, but she didn't want to tell her parents. The ad made it clear that the DFL would always protect her privacy and her fundamental right to an abortion. No questions asked, no secrets revealed, at least not to the parents. Then there was the ad that featured a married couple who had decided a late-term abortion was vitally necessary. They weren't told why, but the couple couldn't possibly have been more appealing. Then something went terribly wrong with abortion. The baby survived. What's next? We weren't told. But with the DFL in charge, it seems safe to assume that the matter could be dealt with. Of course, there was a parallel ad that reminded voters abortion already was legal in Minnesota well beyond first trimester. Attempting to cover as many issues as possible, the DFL also ran ads condemning various inconveniences, such as waiting periods to an abortion or required ultrasounds or counseling sessions, all that could be easily, readily dispensed with. And just for good measure, that comprehensive DFL ad campaign made it clear that the DFL-controlled legislature would prohibit any local government authority from ever taking any action that would limit anyone's fundamental right to reproductive health care. It was quite an amazing ad campaign. But wait a minute. Maybe my memory isn't quite what it used to be. The fact is, the ads that I've just detailed about the abortion policies DFLers planned to enact never appeared at all. You see, I've been reading the provisions of the bill on the reproductive freedom currently under consideration in our DFL-controlled legislature. The bill is very brief, so brief that there's nothing in it that would place any limitation at all on any individual's right to obtain an abortion right up until the moment of birth. It's all very weird. It's all very, what's the word, extreme. Yeah, that's it. It's all very extreme, and it's coming back to me now. That is the idea with which the actual DFL ads kept interrupting football games last week. Those ads were all about extremism, Republican extremism. How the DFL opponents were too extreme for Minnesota, weren't they? Trouble is, those actual DFL ads never got around to revealing who the real extremists were and